The Delusion Deepens Over COVID. Dr. Peter McCullough joins us today right here on the Christian Worldview radio program, where the mission is to sharpen the biblical worldview of Christians and to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ. I'm David Wheaton, the host, and our website is thechristianworldview.org. When you go there, be sure to find out more about our national sponsor, Samaritan Ministries, who provide a biblical solution to health care. 5 months ago, in April 2021 of this year, Dr. Peter McCullough, a high-profile medical doctor who's an internist and cardiologist, came on the Christian Worldview to discuss an early treatment protocol for COVID-19 that he and other doctors had innovated rather than the get the vaccine and hope for the best approach of the mainstream medical establishment and government leaders. A lot has happened over the past 5 months. Dr. McCullough, despite being one of the most renowned doctors in his field and leader in COVID treatment, was essentially terminated where he practiced medicine in Texas and then sued. Meanwhile, COVID injection coercion and mandates have reached fever pitch, despite the so-called vaccine having low efficacy against contracting or spreading the virus and having many adverse health events, including deaths. No matter, just this week, the Biden administration has mandated the so-called vaccine for businesses. This from Fox News. President Joe Biden announced Thursday that all employers with more than 100 workers will be forced to require coronavirus vaccinations or test employees weekly. The mandate is expected to affect as many as 100 million Americans. The article goes on to say the roughly 17 million workers at health facilities that receive federal Medicare or Medicaid also will have to be vaccinated. There are the strings. If you're attached to government, here comes the coercion. Biden will have OSHA, which is the Occupational Safety and Health Administration of the federal government, make a rule requiring employees of companies to be tested. Companies will have to pay for the testing, but they can pass the cost on to employees. Biden is also signing an executive order to require vaccination for employees of the executive branch and contractors who do business with the federal government with no option to test instead. That covers several million more workers. According to Forbes, businesses that refuse to comply, government's favorite word, comply, with the mandate will open themselves up to hefty fines up to nearly $14,000 per violation. In July, the article concludes, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki told reporters that a federal vaccine mandate was, quote, not the role of the federal government, unquote. Well, I guess that was a lie. This is why we are having Dr. Peter McCullough join us again this weekend on the Christian Worldview to discuss many issues surrounding the virus treatment, the so-called vaccine, and what is driving the delusion and really sinister wickedness over a treatable virus with a very low lethality rate. Now, just in advance of the interview, there's going to be lots of specific medical information given today. And so you might ask, what does this have to do with the Christian worldview? Well, the Christian worldview is about truth. When there are lies being told and believed that affect you physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, economically, or that affect the church and pave the way for the Antichrist, which we believe this is where this is going, to this globalized government, which Revelation talks about, we want to bring out the truth. There has always been a war on truth, but it has become even more intense right now in America. What you're going to hear today is diametrically opposed to the mainstream medical establishment and government, big business, the educational system, and the media. They are all drinking from the same contaminated well of lies, coming from Dr. Fauci, the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, or the National Institutes of Health. All they say is, get vaccinated or else. It doesn't work, it's dangerous, it's unscientific, and it's evil. So why is Dr. McCullough to be trusted over them? Well, his credentials are of the highest level. But more important than that, he's had success treating patients with COVID. Many members of my own family have had COVID and used the treatment protocol that he and the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons recommend. So what he advocates for aligns with reality, which is just another word for the truth. So I would encourage you to take notes on the program today. If you can't write fast enough, hear the program again at thechristianworldview.org. You can download the transcript of the program. That will be up fairly soon. We also have literature linked at thechristianworldview.org. It's sad to say that you're largely on your own for COVID treatment. You have to do your own research about medications, dosages, timing of those medications, because your local doctor probably won't help you. He or she is going to conclude that you are some conspiracy theorist not following the CDC. That is the terrible state we are currently in this country. But that's why we are doing this program today, to bring out the truth. Let's get to the first segment of the interview with Dr. Peter McCullough. Dr. McCullough, it's been 5 months. It doesn't seem like too long of a time since you were last on the program, but a whole lot has happened since then, both with this COVID virus and the mandates and things surrounding that, but also with you personally as a result of being very outspoken and bringing out the truth on so much of what is going on. Let's just start with the virus, and then you can talk about what's happened to you personally as well. We've had new variants come infecting those who have gotten the COVID injection and those who haven't gotten it. You have injection mandates for a non-effective, people with the so-called vaccine still get the virus. There's a lot of adverse risk, even death, with getting this so-called vaccine. Had questionable FDA and very quick approval. You can talk about that. There's been a ridiculing of the treatment protocol that you brought out. You were the one who were primarily responsible for the early treatment guide for COVID with ivermectin and other medications. Most doctors, vast majority of doctors, won't even prescribe those medications. And there's authoritarian mandates both in the U.S. and abroad. So remind us about your medical background, your experience with treating COVID, and how you would describe the situation with COVID in the United States right now.
Thanks for having me on the show. And what you described sounds pretty grim, but it's true. Over the last 5 months, things have dramatically changed. And as introduced, I'm an internist and cardiologist in Dallas, Texas. I'm in academic practice. I see patients every week. I also spend time editing two major journals, Reviews in Cardiovascular Medicine and Cardiorenal Medicine. I'm the editor-in-chief. I'm the president of the Cardiorenal Society of America, a major multidisciplinary medical society. And I've recently taken on the role of chief medical advisor for the Truth for Health Foundation, which is very much aligned with what we're talking about now. In the last 18 months, I have really thrown myself into the COVID-19 pandemic in terms of service, to serve the United States and to serve the world, both as a practicing doctor, meaning I've tried to help as many patients as I possibly can, but also as an academic physician and an author and an investigator. I have, as a backdrop, I have over 650 publications in the National Library of Medicine. I have over 45 now on COVID-19, including the two pivotal documents teaching doctors how to treat COVID-19 before the hospital, the first one in the American Journal of Medicine and the second one in Reviews in Cardiovascular Medicine. These protocols and flow diagrams are the most frequently used and relied upon in the world to treat COVID-19. And our CDC had sketched out for us that we were on target to lose 1.7 to 2.1 million Americans. And despite our two big waves in the wintertime and now with the Delta wave, we've kept mortalities between 600 and 700,000. It's still too many. We know our methods. If we treat patients early with all the tools available, including the emergency use authorization of monoclonal antibodies and the drugs in sequence, we know we can reduce mortality and hospitalizations by about 85%. Sadly, those being hospitalized, nearly every single one of them has received no early treatment for COVID-19.
Yeah, that is just really tragic. And as I mentioned earlier this year, my parents were, when they got COVID, elderly in their late 80s got COVID, you were very integral in their treatment and recovery from COVID-19. So we thank you so much for that. That was early on when some of these early treatment protocols were just in the last few months before that, just coming out. And now they've become much more well-known since that time, in large part because of your early treatment guide with ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine, Z-Pak, zithromycin, prednisone, different supplements and so forth. There are others that you can talk about. Has anything changed with that early treatment protocol that you have found over the last 5 or 6 months? And why is it being so suppressed and ridiculed? I mean, ivermectin, for our listeners, contact us, you know, saying America's Frontline Doctors, other places where they've tried to get it, it's been very hard to get.
The treatment has advanced. I can tell you that we have even more supportive data. So let's just start out with a critical update about reducing the viral burden in the nose and the mouth. And this is new. We've added it to our recent guidance in the Truth for Health Home Treatment Guide. It's been shown in studies from Singapore and all over the world, our American dentists, and supported in concept by the American Dental Association, that if we use dilute povidone iodine, you know, betadine, the brown solution we use to sterilize wounds, just a few drops in a juice glass of water, turns the water brown, swish it and spit it, gargle with it and spit it out, Q-tip it up in the nose or spray it up in the nose, snort it out. That kills the virus on contact. It's almost like what a hand sanitizer would do for the hands. And so this povidone iodine is very effective. It can be used twice a day to prevent the viral infection, especially if one's out in contact with others. Dentists personally and dental assistants have been doing this all year. They've been in the mouths of people all year long, and there haven't been any dental outbreaks. I've been in close communication with Paul Gossett in Chicago. He's a leading anti-infective dentist. He just let me know that he actually had direct contact with a COVID patient just the other day. And what he does is when he has direct contact, and patients are very good, they'll tell them later on that day they turn positive. He increases that povidone iodine oral and nasal program to 4 times a day to zap the virus. He actually did it in the patient themselves. So the patient who acutely sick or just has incipient COVID-19, in fact, that really truncated the infection. The patient never really developed much in the way of symptoms, and the dentist who came in contact, he never developed it. Now, if there's iodine sensitivity, the next in line could be dilute hydrogen peroxide. After that, it can be dilute sodium hypochlorite, which is actually dilute bleach. You can put a couple drops of bleach in a glass of water, swish and spit it out. That works. That doesn't go up the nose, however, and you certainly don't swallow any of these. And then third in line would be Listerine, or just a form of a mouthwash. Regular Listerine or any of the brands of Listerine works, but again, not up in the nose. So a povidone iodine, the best. So that's the first big addition. After that, for patients acutely treated under age 50, we don't recommend any treatment except for a nutraceutical bundle. Zinc 50 milligrams, vitamin D 5,000 international units, vitamin C 3,000 milligrams, and quercetin 500 milligrams twice a day. I've worked with some doctors from Ireland that have actually used higher vitamin D protocols in acute treatment, up to 20,000 international units a day. And young people, they will get through the illness. We have a very good, our CDC has a return to work policy that 10 days from the onset of illness, if they have 48 hours without constitutional symptoms, they can return to work, no test needed. We know that early treatment for those at higher risk can shorten the duration of viral shedding. Those over age 50 do need treatment. We lead with what recently Joe Rogan had received, and Governor Abbott and former President Trump. They all get this. And Americans should demand it. High-risk seniors should get monoclonal antibodies. We have the Regeneron compound. It's a combination of carisivimab and indomivab, and it's wonderful. 1 hour infusion, 1 hour of observation. Go home after that and then start the sequence multi-drug therapy. We can use hydroxychloroquine-based protocols, 251 supportive studies, given early, very effective, has 3 mechanisms of action to combat the virus, or ivermectin that has 61 supportive studies, 31 randomized trials, 2 mechanisms of action that it has against the virus, combined with doxycycline, azithromycin. After that, inhaled budesonide, oral prednisone, oral colchicine, aspirin 325 milligrams, and then for high-risk individuals, blood thinners, Lovenox or oral anticoagulants. It sounds like a lot, but we have to use a lot of drugs, just like we would in the hospital, but we do them much earlier to avoid hospitalization and death. And as you point out in your parents, even very high-risk seniors we've been able to bring through the illness, the doctor makes these decisions. A lot of doctors are on the sidelines because it takes really a terrific amount of medical skill to do this. This is not for the junior doctor. It's mainly senior doctors doing this. We need more to develop the skills and competence in treating COVID-19 as an outpatient. It's fully supported by the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, Frontline Critical Care Consortium, American Frontline Doctors, and Truth for Health Foundation. We have 4 major organizations supporting early treatment, supporting, fully supporting monoclonal antibodies, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, all the drugs in sequence. And we've heard chilling statements as you've applied, as you've implied, from the American Medical Association, from the CDC, NIH, FDA, and then major media about these drugs. And one of the things that we heard that was at this point in time just irresponsible and is costing American lives, we heard some negative words about ivermectin. And those negative words were reprehensible and are costing human lives.
They called it a horse dewormer. Is that what you're referring to?
Now, can you imagine this? This is a drug. It's a drug used in humans. Now, a lot of drugs we use in animals, we use in humans as well, including diuretics, Lasix, steroids, other drugs, antibiotics. But in this case, ivermectin, human ivermectin, comes in 3-milligram tablets. It also can be put in larger capsules by confounding pharmacies. It's a human-grade product. The drug itself has won a Nobel Prize, which is highly unusual and really amazing that a drug would be so effective. It's used for strongyloides, scabies. We've treated little children with it, those who have parasitic infections. It happens to work against COVID-19. It's perfectly safe. The only confusion or additional discussion about ivermectin is that it's weight-based, so we have to know the weight of the patient. So one of the false storylines that we heard is that poison control centers were being overwhelmed with calls regarding ivermectin, you know, basically implying that patients were overdosing or being harmed with ivermectin. Well, the trial site news really broke this open. They got the data from the National Poison Control Center, and they found out the vast majority of the calls were just clarification on the dose based on the weight of the patient. There were no deaths. There was nothing serious that happened. We heard false reports that hospitals were overflowing with ivermectin overdoses, and the hospitals themselves had to come out and say, no, that's not true, that there are people who have bad intentions for the U.S. public, and they're trying to harm individuals by confusing them and dissuading them from using ivermectin, which is evidence-based. So this really came to a head. The Association of American Physicians and Surgeons fired a letter over to the American Medical Association and basically said, stop this, that if the AMA, CDC, FDA, NIH, if they don't address early treatment, get out of the way, and they need to basically be silent and let these organizations that have taken the role in early treatment do their job.
The Christian Worldview with David Wheaton returns in just a moment.
Psalm 46 starts, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth should change. The earth is changing. A strong delusion has bewitched the leaders and peoples of this world. So what's a Christian to do? Focus on the most important thing, God and his perfect and powerful attributes. Our new featured resource is Dr. Stephen Lawson's book, Show Me Your Glory, Understanding the Majestic Splendor of God. For a limited time, we are offering Show Me Your Glory for a donation of any amount to the Christian Worldview. This hardcover book is 278 pages with a retail price of $19. To order, go to thechristianworldview.org or call 1-888-646-2233 or write to Box 401, Excelsior, Minnesota 55331. That's thechristianworldview.org.
Be sure to take advantage of two free resources that will keep you informed and sharpen your worldview. The first is the Christian Worldview Weekly Email, which comes to your inbox each Friday. It contains a preview of the upcoming radio program, along with need-to-read articles, featured resources, special events, and audio of the previous program. The second is the Christian Worldview Annual Print Letter, which is delivered to your mailbox in November. It contains a year-end letter from host David Wheaton and a listing of our store items, including DVDs, books, children's materials, and more. You can sign up for the weekly email and annual print letter by visiting thechristianworldview.org or calling 1-888-646-2233. Your email and mailing address will never be shared, and you can unsubscribe at any time. Call 1-888-646-2233 or visit thechristianworldview.org.
Welcome back to The Christian Worldview. Be sure to visit our website, thechristianworldview.org, where you can subscribe to our free weekly email and annual print newsletter, order resources for adults and children, and support the ministry. Now, back to today's program with host David Wheaton.
Dr. Peter McCullough with us today on the Christian Worldview radio program, an academic internist and cardiologist from Texas. You probably have seen him in media over the last many months. He's been on the front line of treating COVID-19. I'd like to talk, before we get into more about the so-called vaccine and so forth, Dr. McCullough, I'd like you to describe what has personally happened to you and your practice over the last 5 months since the last time we talked, for your courage in coming forward and in encouraging people to do this early treatment protocol for COVID and all the things you've been advocating for.
You know, I maintain my board certifications in internal medicine and cardiology by the American Board of Internal Medicine. And in fact, I just finished renewing my internal medicine boards. And I'm in my fourth decade of practice. That's typically the peak of a doctor's career. I'm basically there. I'm the most published person in my field in the world in history. I now had about 18 months of dedicated study on COVID-19. I've reviewed thousands of reports. I've led work groups. I'm a frequent commentator for The Hill last year. Now I have America Out Loud Talk Radio, the McCullough Report. I have a window to America every week through the America Out Loud platform. I'm a frequent contributor to Fox News. I've had U.S. senators, as well as individuals across many branches of government and in the private sector, reach out to me for my opinions. And that's valid. Doctors are available and should give second opinions. We should have second opinions. No two doctors agree on anything. And medical and clinical and scientific discourse is really the lifeblood of medicine. And as I was treating patients with COVID-19 from the onset of the pandemic, innovating and publishing my observations, publishing the evidence, refining and bringing America and the world an approach to avoid hospitalization and death, which basically has shown that we can reduce hospitalization and death by 85%, I received some chilling messages from the health system where I was employed, and things moved along. And towards the end of January, early February, my contract was not renewed. Now, I had a stellar performance. I was a leading grant getter, leading publisher, thriving practice. All the metrics were excellent. And the explanation for the non-renewal of my contract, which was tantamount to termination, was no explanation, none whatsoever. So I negotiated a separation agreement, and doctors, like professional athletes, good ones, can be picked up by another team. I got picked up by a private practice, worked very hard over 2 months to transfer all my insurance contracts, all my patient contacts, and to a new practice, basically an office in the same building, downtown complex. Tremendous amount of work and effort. Transferred to a new practice, got going, and the day the prior health system that I work for announced their unwanted, dreaded vaccine mandate, that day they were mentioned in a news article that came out, actually for me, before even there was any court documents, that announced that they were suing me. They were suing me. The title of the newspaper piece was "A Major Health System Sues Vaccine Skeptic." The article was clearly defamatory, and then court documents came through, and we said, well, really, what's the issue? And they said, the issue is you violated terms of your separation agreement, that you were falsely representing yourself as an employee of the health system, that you were declaring titles that you no longer held. My opinions are always my own, but this lawsuit implied that I was putting forward my opinions as those of the healthcare system. And it's just on face value, it looked like a frivolous lawsuit. And what it turned out is that when I looked on the internet, there were 800,000 profiles, professional profiles of me kept at other organizations. One of the most frequent ones that came up in a Google search was from Harvard. And so it basically was keeping my old profile from when I lectured there two years ago. So many of the media productions, post-production, would grab an old profile and put it on, and it was unbeknownst to me. And so I think that was a part of the reason why the lawsuit was generated, was this idea, you know, the media was playing a role in this. The lawsuit hasn't gone too far. I think the health system and various stakeholders are trying to silence me. They're trying to suppress our scientific interchange, is what we're having now. This is, of course, illegal. that scientific interchange, as long as it's a topic of public health importance, as long as we're not talking about someone's personal life or private details, we're talking about COVID-19. This is what we're doing today. We're talking about the pandemic response. That is a topic of public health importance. All people have a right to interchange on this, and no one can sue each other over it. Subsequently, without any explanation, I've been stripped of my professorship at Texas A&M, as well as my professorship at Texas Christian University, University of North Texas. So I held two professorships, and those letters came in. Again, no explanation. You're basically stripped of these titles. So there is a wave against medical freedom, academic freedom, scientific excellence. And there's no doubt about it. And I guess I am at the vanguard of that.
Thank you for sharing that. That is just Orwellian is what it is. I mean, what are they afraid of? I mean, what are you doing that is so dangerous that they think they need to silence you at all costs? It really is, I think, indicative of all what's going on. This is a big information war over COVID. People, and we hear from listeners all the time, you know, where do we get truthful information on this? People have lost complete trust in media. They've lost trust in CDC, NIH, you know, leading medical authorities. They're even their local doctor. They asked their doctor about ivermectin. They looked it up on the NIH site. No, that's never proven to do anything. That's no good. You don't need that. In other words, there's a complete lack of trust. It's like people are on their own who aren't doctors trying to figure out what to do, what they should do if they get COVID-19. Dr. Peter McCullough joins us today. I just want to ask one more question about treatment. The hospital treatment that's being given. We've had some listeners contact us who couldn't get the early treatment protocol medication that you've recommended. And we've tried to tell them, get them in advance, because once you get sick, it's hard to get them quickly. Then they have to go into the hospital. And I believe they're getting things like remdesivir, dexamethasone, and anticoagulant and so forth. Speak specifically about remdesivir. I've heard some things that are very negative about that medication, that antiviral medication. Is that a safe medication to take when you have COVID?
You're right. When patients are outpatients, it's possible for us to give very, very comprehensive multi-drug therapy as outpatients. In fact, we can use oxygen concentrators, nebulizers, and turn the house into an ICU unit. And there's very high quality care, and it takes many drugs to treat COVID-19. We do that all at home. And when patients go into the hospital, there is a giant step down in care. The hospitals basically follow the National Institutes of Health and other federal agency guidelines, which are very minimalistic. Well, they are offered remdesivir, which is a polymerase inhibitor. The data are very mixed on it. Many leading organizations think it has no fundamental effect because it's given too late. By the time someone comes in the hospital, they've already had the infection for 2 to 4 weeks. The viral replication phase is long gone. And remdesivir is a failed Ebola drug. Its patents and revenue ties back to China, and it's highly toxic. It's toxic to the liver and kidneys. We're supposed to give 5 days of infusion of remdesivir. Hardly any patients can get through 5 days of infusion because of its toxicity. Mm. Another drug that's very odd is dexamethasone, but the dose is given is 6 milligrams, and that comes from one trial which showed a signal of benefit, but the mortality was very high in the dexamethasone group in that clinical trial from England. And when we use dexamethasone for anti-inflammatory purposes, we use 10 milligrams 4 times a day. For COVID-19, you know what the dose is? 6 milligrams a day. And it's not a very balanced steroid. It's more of a glucocorticoid. It raises blood sugar, which is the last thing we want to do. So I can tell you clinically in practice now, we've actually never used dexamethasone as an outpatient. It's such an odd dose. The pharmacies don't even carry it. We use prednisone. Everybody here knows what prednisone is. We use it for asthma and for poison ivy. We use it for a variety of conditions. It works great. So patients get remdesivir and dexamethasone in the hospital, which offers very little help. What they should be getting if they have low oxygen saturation is full dose aspirin, 325 milligrams, and full dose low molecular heparin, Lovenox, or intravenous heparin. And many times they're not adequately anticoagulated. When the oxygen saturation goes down, that means the lungs are filling up with blood clots. And when autopsies are done, the lungs are filled with micro blood clots. And time again, we do not see patients adequately anticoagulated. So we don't see adequate use of any type of antivirals that work. We don't see comprehensive anti-inflammatories. We would use inhaled budesonide, oral prednisone, oral colchicine. As an outpatient, we can use oral montelukast or singulair, none of those things are done as an inpatient. And then for outpatient anticoagulation, we do every bit as good as the hospital. So for many reasons, the only purpose of hospitalization would be mechanical ventilation.
Dr. Peter McCullough with us today in the Christian Worldview. I want to just transition quickly over to the injection or the so-called vaccine. With what you know now, if someone has not had COVID, do you recommend they get this injection?
I don't think anybody had any problems with the vaccines back in December, January, February. We had great hope for them. With the older variants, they had about 90% vaccine efficacy, even though there was very little challenge to anybody in the trials with COVID. So the rates of COVID were way below 1% for active treatment and placebo. But they looked pretty good coming out of registrational trials. We had a lot of questions regarding their mechanism of action. And things really blew wide open. By January 22nd, we already had 186 deaths. That exceeded the 150 we would see typically for all 278 million shots, 70 vaccines. We were already past a limit of concern. And that was only 27 million people getting the COVID-19 vaccines. And it went from there. There was no stopping of this. There was no data safety monitoring board, no safety reviews, no report card on the vaccines. It's, you know, here we are, September. Americans have still yet to see a press briefing on vaccine safety and efficacy from the CDC and NIH, who are leading the program. Can you imagine that?
Wow.
9 months. We have three products. There must be a winner. There must be a loser. There must be somebody in between. No mention of any data on the vaccines. The CDC tells us, go to VAERS, go to the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. If we go there, we're alarmed with what we see. Over 13,000 deaths. Two separate reports, Rose and McLachlan, show that 50% of these deaths, which is astronomical. Again, you know, 150 would be the line. We're at 13,000 deaths after people have taken these vaccines. The CDC has certified this. 50% have occurred within 48 hours, 80% within a week, tightly related to the administration of the vaccine. 86% of the cases, no other explanation for why they died. They walked into a vaccine center and they died a few days later. Mm. We have a couple hundred thousand hospitalizations, ER visits, office visits, 545,000 vaccine injuries and climbing. We have FDA warnings. The FDA is trying to tell us these vaccines have safety issues. Myocarditis or inflammation with Pfizer and Moderna, we have over 5,000 cases of that. That's not a small number at all. That's a huge number. And now Johnson & Johnson warnings for paralysis, Guillain-Barré syndrome, and blood clots in the brain of women across the broad age range. So we have a situation where the vaccines have a safety profile that's alarming. Americans stopped taking the vaccine mid-April. The rates of vaccination in the United States have been flatlined for months now because the word is out. There's an internet survey, unofficial, is on Twitter, but 12% of Americans knew somebody in their circles who died after the vaccine.
Right.
There's nothing that's going to cause more vaccine hesitancy than knowing somebody who died after the vaccine.
The Christian Worldview with David Wheaton returns in just a moment.
I struggled with my identity all the way through my life. Lived 8 years as Laura Jensen until I found the Lord Jesus Christ.
The issues are unavoidable. They're on the news.
The White House in rainbow colors.
They're in our legislation.
The Texas bathroom bill.
In our schools.
Drag queen story hour.
They're even reaching into our churches.
Let us be the church together.
We're not just talking about issues. We're talking about people.
The proceeding is from In His Image, a 103-minute documentary film that biblically and compassionately addresses the issue of transgenderism. You can order the DVD for a donation of any amount to the Christian Worldview. Call 1-888-646-2233 or write to Box 401, Excelsior, Minnesota 55331 or visit thechristianworldview.org. That's 1-888-646-2233 or thechristianworldview.org.
When it comes to your healthcare provider, what are some words you would use to describe your experience with them? Comfort? Peace? Confidence? Well, at Samaritan Ministries, those are just some of the words our members use frequently. Like Samaritan member, former long-term board member, and now staff member Jamie Piles uses to describe his 24-year relationship with Samaritan Ministries.
It's hard to put words into the comfort and the relief and the peace that you have as you've come to terms that Samaritan Ministries is real, it's viable, and it's working, and it's there. We just thank God that He's allowed us to have that kind of peace, to be in a situation where I can focus on things that are far more important than what are we going to do about healthcare.
Want to be part of a growing, caring community of Christians who faithfully share each other's medical needs each month, all without the use of insurance? Find out more at SamaritanMinistries.org/TCW. That's SamaritanMinistries.org/TCW.
Thanks for joining us on the Christian Worldview. Just a reminder that today's program and past programs are archived at our website, thechristianworldview.org. Short takes are also available, and be sure to share with others. Now, back to today's program with host David Wheaton.
Dr. Peter McCullough with us today on the Christian Worldview. There's a idea out there, or a notion out there, it's being asserted that those who have received this COVID injection, that this is the reason that they're actually more dangerous with so-called shedding. This is causing the variants. The vaccinated people are causing the variants. They'll see what's going on in Israel, where it's been a highly vaccinated population. Could you bring some clarity to those particular issues?
I think the big news after the safety story has evolved, I think Americans know there's giant issues with respect to safety. There's nobody in America that thinks these vaccines are safe. But what surprised us is what happened. So during the registrational trials, we heard 90% vaccine efficacy, absolute risk reductions less than 1%, meaning the vaccines weren't going to have a population impact, but suggesting they did do something beneficial. What we've seen is once we get to about 25% of the population vaccinated, as shown by Neeson and colleagues in a paper from Mayo Clinic in Boston, once we hit 25% vaccinated, we actually allow a variant or a mutant strain to move forward and be dominant. So we've always had the strains. The virus replicates. It makes mistakes. So we've always had alpha, beta, gamma. We can go through the Greek alphabet. We always have about 12 to 14 different strains. But when we vaccinated, once we hit more than 25% of the population vaccinated, here we go. U.S., we're at 48%. We allow a dominant strain to move forward. In this case, it's Delta. Delta went from 1% or 2% early in the spring to 99.1%. Now, we've never had a super dominant strain of virus. Israel's been 3 months ahead of us. Israel now, same issue with the Delta pandemic outbreak. They have over 80% of their population who has COVID-19. They're fully vaccinated.
Wow.
They have now data. They keep doubling down on this. They exclusively use Pfizer. And in a report by Levine Teifenbaum from Haifa and Tel Aviv in Israel, they have a report of people with COVID-19, listen to this. They have over 11,000 people in this sample. The unvaccinated are only 1920. The fully vaccinated are 9734. And 245 now are people who've received a booster. So what do we know? We know that the Israelis, they must be individuals, are contracting COVID-19, the Delta variant. They're vaccinated. They must be spreading it to each other because they're all vaccinated. Who are eligible to get it, and they are getting sick. So the majority of people in the hospital are vaccinated. The majority of people dying are vaccinated. Same thing is true in Iceland, in Gibraltar, Singapore, and the UK. Anywhere we look where the Delta variant is dominant, it looks like now the vaccinated are fully participating in the Delta outbreak. So a couple of important papers, one by Chow and colleagues from a unit of Oxford, Ho Chi Minh City, had fully vaccinated healthcare workers. They had received AstraZeneca Oxford vaccine. They had an outbreak in June. They locked down the hospital. They wouldn't let the workers leave their quarters there in the hospital. And then they actually studied the workers who were passing Delta to one another, 69 workers in an outbreak. And what they showed is that the viral load in the nose and mouth was 251 times that of patients in the unvaccinated era with prior variant strains. Another paper by Louis and colleagues from Guangzhou, China, same thing, Delta, 1,000-fold carriage in the mouth and nose compared to an unvaccinated era with prior mutant strains. So we have a situation where we're nearly certain now, and our CDC directors come on TV and basically told America that those vaccinated can acquire and carry Delta. And in fact, it looks like the vaccinated are super spreaders, that they probably contract Delta, they pass it and spread it to younger people, and the younger unvaccinated people are bearing the brunt of the Delta outbreak. But it is a crisis of the vaccinated, and there is some fraudulent reporting going on. I just made a drive from Dallas down to Austin. I saw a billboard that said over 90% of those in the hospital are unvaccinated. Now, why would a hospital blow money on a billboard to make that announcement? That could be true for that hospital or health system. But I can tell you nationwide, CDC from the COVID-net data, representative data, in June, 23.4% of those in the hospital are fully or partially vaccinated. Havers and colleagues published that paper. That was June. So I can tell you in July and August, the proportion of patients in the hospital that are partially and fully vaccinated will continue to grow. This is a crisis clearly contributed by the vaccinated.
Wow. So the short answer to your question is you do not recommend, if someone has not had COVID-19, or even if they have had COVID-19, of course, for sure, that you do not recommend they get this COVID injection. The answer is no, you don't recommend it.
You know, I've never either recommended or not recommended. You know, it's a voluntary program. People, and they can choose whether or not they want to get the vaccine. One thing I can tell people is that the program has always excluded COVID recovered patients, suspected COVID recovered patients, those with positive antibodies, pregnant women, and women at childbearing age. It always has, because the FDA excluded them because they know the vaccine either wouldn't work or cause harm. And now as things have fully evolved, it looks like the vaccines, clearly Pfizer does not cover Delta. Venkatakrishnan and all have shown that there's what's called antigenic escape. The vaccines don't cover Delta. Pfizer, and the Israeli health minister, has Pfizer at 39% protection. Piernak and colleagues from Mayo Clinic in Boston have Pfizer at 42% protection. The REACT database from the UK has Pfizer in less than 40% protection. So I can tell you, a vaccine that's less than 50% protection and can't last a year, both Israel and the United States have basically said we have to give boosters now in a time interval shorter than a year. Pfizer at this point in time is commercially a dead vaccine. It's not commercially viable. And what we saw on August 23rd was one of the greatest examples of regulatory malfeasance, I think, that'll go down in medical history. You know, they met, the FDA met, they did not approve Pfizer. They looked at legacy data. They didn't even look at the failing Delta data. Mm. They just looked at legacy data. Pfizer was not approved. It got a continuation of the emergency use authorization. BioNTech, the German company, legally distinct, maybe medicinally distinct product, doesn't exist in the United States. That got a conditional approval, but a lot of post-marketing obligations, including studies on myocarditis and a lot of disclosures about no data and confidence in use in pregnancy, et cetera. So the BioNTech package insert is not a very proud document. And what came out of that meeting was a false talking point that Pfizer was approved. Pfizer wasn't approved. There is no approved vaccine in the United States. It went even up to the president of the United States with a false talking point. This got so bad that two of the FDA officials, one who signed the letter to BioNTech right in the middle of this big regulatory season for vaccines, the head of the vaccine and biologic products division at the FDA, she resigns. Dr. Gruber resigns. So Americans should look at this. When we have a big public program on vaccines, our stakeholders have not given America a single report or press briefing on vaccine safety and efficacy. We have a fraudulent August 23rd meeting with a false talking point that there's a Pfizer approved, and it's not. It triggers a wave of ill-advised, unnecessary vaccine mandates. And then a week later, our FDA officials resign. I tell you, we have a major problem on our hands. We have a crisis in confidence on the COVID-19 vaccines. Americans don't want them. We have about half of America have taken the vaccine early before we really knew all this. The vaccine uptake has come to a screeching halt in mid-spring, and now nobody wants these vaccines. The mandates, none of them are welcome, and they are ill-advised, and we're coming to a great American showdown. Are people going to be forced into these vaccines, which don't work well enough for everyone, for sure? Which vaccine are they going to choose that they're going to force into it? Nobody knows. And then what are we going to do about those who will continue to be harmed or die after the vaccine once they're forced into it by their employers, which is an overreach? The CDC says the program is voluntary. So anybody mandating a vaccine is mandating something that's voluntary. It's the oddest thing to be forced to take a vaccine, but then the consent form says you're recognizing that this you're doing this on your own volition.
Does that apply to companies mandating it as well? Because that's been a big question we've been receiving is, what do we do? We don't want to take this so-called vaccine. I work for a company. I'm going to lose my job. What do you recommend that person does?
Well, no job, no student status, no social status is worth risking one's life, right? So if we said, listen, you got to jump out of an airplane without a parachute to keep your job, no one's going to do that. Over 13,000 Americans, you know, there is a federal lawsuit based on CMS data and extrapolation. I think the real number a month ago was 45,000 Americans have lost their lives due to the vaccine. That's like a that's like the sum total casualties for a war.
Yeah.
No job is worth losing one's life. The injuries, the cardiac, neurologic, immunologic, and hematologic injuries, some of them are permanent. And there's no permanent health injury that's worth it, worth trying to retain a job over. So what we're seeing is a great showdown. Americans are saying, listen, we're not going to take the vaccine. They're applying for medical and religious exemptions. If they're not honored, then they are filing disputes. They are seeking legal action. They're showing up to work anyway. And we'll have to see if employers wrongfully terminate employees and what the fallout of this. You know, one of the concerns is that with the legal justice system, there is no fairness, that the courts are equally as corrupted as the board of directors of these various employers, that there's a widespread corruption towards forcing an unsafe and ineffective vaccine on the population. So it may come down to what's happening outside the United States, a show of force, the mass will of the population to break the back of this vaccine cabal.
Final question for you, Dr. McCullough, and thank you so much for coming on the Christian Worldview today. Taking it all together, what you have described today, there is either a widespread delusion amongst those in leadership in this country, both political, medical, and otherwise, or there is a purposeful disinformation campaign to have people take this so-called vaccine that can harm them, to not tell them about drugs, medication protocol that can help them get over it. I mean, you can go to nefarious ends here pretty quickly. Is it just simply the money for big pharmaceutical companies, for their investors, for those pushing them in government like Dr. Fauci? Or is there something even worse, something like a depopulation scheme in terms of saving the planet from climate change? We have too many people. I mean, these things seem crazy, but everything we've discussed today, where does it take you? If you add all these things together, what is your conclusion to this delusion or this disinformation campaign taking on? What is behind it?
You know, when I went on with Tucker Carlson on Tucker Carlson Today, I was in the studio and I started to explain what was going on back in May. This is before the mandates. And at one point in time, he just threw his hands up in the air. He looked at the camera. He goes, "What is going on? What is behind this?" And I said, "Tucker, I said, I'm just a doctor. I'm just trying to explain to you what I'm seeing and what I'm facing here. I'm not making this up. This seems very real." And now it is advancing forward now as a menace. The vaccine program is absolutely a menace. The suppression of early treatment is immoral. It's unethical. From a civil perspective, it's illegal. We're seeing malfeasance by multiple officials and agencies in positions of authority. We're seeing willful misconduct going on. We're seeing, quite honestly, fraud and fraudulent reporting in the media and intentional misinformation from those in position of authority. And then you see the counterweight of people like myself trying to bring truth. All I'm doing is citing the data. And you see I'm pinpoint. I know that fact checkers follow me around the internet, and they're checking to see if I'm going to miss a single citation or a single data, and they can never find it. But in terms of what's behind it, I point your listeners to a book that's coming out. In fact, if you buy it now, you can get the full transcript electronically, which is wonderful. Then get the print book, which is at the printers right now. It's called COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey. The first author is Peter Bregan. He's done it with his wife, Ginger Bregan. I've written one of the introductions or the forewords to the book, and it has 2,000 references on the complicated relationships between what went on, how the pandemic was planned, where the virus came from, the response, how all this is coordinated, why the vaccine program has taken on the auspices that it has. And that book explains a lot. The short answer is it's enormously complicated, and there are a ton of stakeholders that are profiting from this.
Dr. McCullough, thank you so much for coming on the Christian Worldview, and all of God's best and grace to you.
And thank you, and God bless you and all your listeners.
We are very thankful for Dr. McCullough coming on the program. Again, if you missed any of it or couldn't get all the information down, listen to the program again at thechristianworldview.org or download the transcript at our website. I also followed up with Dr. McCullough after the program to ask him about someone who has had COVID already. Are they immune from getting COVID in the future, and including the variants? And his response was, yes, they are immune from the variants, and probably for a lifetime. Now, we are not advising you to not get the vaccine. Let me be clear about that. That's your choice. It's not a sin if you get the vaccine. Our point is this. The vaccine is actually not a vaccine and quite ineffective. It's potentially dangerous. It should be your choice, not the government's or your employer's coercing you to get it, and that there is an evil worldview pushing it. That is our big point. So why? Why is there this evil worldview pushing it? Well, I think there's only three reasons that I could think of. Number one, profit. As Dr. McCullough mentioned in the interview, he said, COVID is enormously profitable with lots of stakeholders profiting from this. If you're a big pharmaceutical company producing a vaccine or an investor in that company or have any sort of financial stake in giving a vaccine, so-called vaccine, to literally hundreds of millions or billions of people around the world, this is enormously profitable. Number two, what's pushing this evil worldview is control. This is what God-rejecting man always wants: control, authority. He wants to impose his godless utopia on the world. That's where man always wants to go. And as we see in Revelation, that's where things will go with a globalized government and leader. The third reason this is being pushed: they think the earth is overpopulated. There's too many people, they would say. They're ruining the environment. It's climate change. More people means a worse earth. So if you keep people from getting treatment that'll save them, people die. Or if the vaccine you give them ruins their ability to have children, well, you're slowly depopulating the world. So I think these are some of the reasons that this evil, sinister worldview is being pushed, forced on us. And I think it's going to get worse. Wait till they start advocating for internment centers for those who are unvaccinated, or taking the children away from parents who are unvaccinated because you're endangering them. Let's remember what the Apostle Paul said to the Ephesians in chapter 6. Our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. This is Satan inspiring wicked men and women to impose his godless designs on this world. But Paul goes on to say, take up the full armor of God so that you will be able to resist in the evil day, and having done everything, to stand firm. But to stand firm in the Lord, you must first be in a right relationship with him. You can find out how by going to our website, thechristianworldview.org, and clicking on What Must I Do to Be Saved? Thank you for listening to and supporting the Christian Worldview Radio Ministry. Until next time, think biblically, live accordingly, and stand firm.
The mission of the Christian Worldview is to sharpen the biblical worldview of Christians and proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ. We hope today's broadcast encouraged you toward that end. To hear a replay of today's program, or to sign up for our free weekly email, or to find out what must I do to be saved, go to our website, thechristianworldview.org, or call us toll-free at 1-888-646-2233. The Christian Worldview is a listener-supported ministry and furnished by the Overcomer Foundation, a nonprofit organization. You can find out more, order resources, make a donation, become a monthly partner, and contact us by visiting thechristianworldview.org, calling toll-free 1-888-646-2233, or writing to Box 401, Excelsior, Minnesota 55331. That's Box 401, Excelsior, Minnesota 55331. Thanks for listening to The Christian Worldview. Until next time, think biblically and live accordingly.